Hello and welcome to Pure Imagination Radio. My name's Rachel.
And I'm Julia Cumming.
And we have a very interesting show for you today. As always, we have Mike Thompson in studio, which we're very excited to have him. He is a member of DGR, which stands for Deep Green Resistance.
We're going to tell you more about that. And we also have a lot of really cool current events going on. And I think it's going to be a good show, right, Ray?
Yeah, a lot of things to tell you about this weekend. Also, don't forget about Mother's Day, everyone. For all of you who have mothers. And right now, we'd like to play you a new favorite song by a wonderful woman by the name of Karen Dalton.
Take me to your darkest room. Close every window and lock every door. Very first bother I heard your voice, I'd be in darkness no more. First moment I saw your smile, it would be like heaven to me. There are not any mountains to run it. Just like spring in California, the day you stay, you'll be you.
was Take Me by Karen Dalton, who is... A new favorite.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping you could elaborate a little bit more on her, since you are the new Karen Dalton expert out of the two of us.
Obsessed, but don't know that much. that's for sure. I have one album, and it was lent to me by a friend, and she's like 60s folk singer, became big on the scene in New York City, in the Village, and Bob Dylan has been quoted to say that he really loved her and that she was a big inspiration. In so many words.
Perfect.
Yes. Then you should all look her up and look up her other songs and stuff. Really good.
Cool.
Yay.
So we're really excited that we have Mike Thompson here in studio today, and he is the head of the New York chapter of Deep Green Resistance. So Deep Green Resistance is an analysis, strategy, and movement being born, and supposedly is the only movement of its kind. So we'd like to say hello to you, Mike, and I was hoping you could start off by telling us what makes Deep Green Resistance so different from any of these other movements at right now.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all.
Yay.
And, well, we consider ourselves to be a radical activist organization.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's analysis, meaning we've analyzed the last 10,000 years of human history, the rise and dominance of civilization, as the culture of death that is now threatening every living being on Earth. As a strategy, it critiques ineffective lifestyle actions, such as changing your light bulbs, shorter showers, and explains their inevitable failure to stop the destruction of people, species, and the planet. In contrast, DGR offers a concrete plan for how to stop that destruction. And as an above-ground movement, we're just now taking our first steps. We are less than a year old, but growing. We're based on this analysis and implementing the strategy, and we're recruiting.
Cool.
Very cool.
You tell us, back up a little bit, about what the death culture means exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we kind of see it all as connected. I mean, we're an environmental activist organization, but we connect all social and cultural issues as well. Civilization itself is the problem. Indigenous societies, for example, in all their diversity, should be viewed as positive examples of the way we could and should thrive on this planet. It's not a coincidence that they were and are the victims of our culture. And past resistance movements in various parts of the world should be seen as positive and negative examples of how we should be fighting back.
And so this is a new movement, you were saying, before we went on air, about like 6 months? Is that what you're saying?
About that, yeah.
A year?
Oh.
Yeah, 6 to 8 months.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Very cool. And I know that you you mentioned that you guys offer a concrete plan to stop the destruction, which I think is refreshing. As you know, we talk to a lot of guests on the show, and there are a lot of things that are said, or people that recognize problems, but I think not a lot of clear ways to focus that energy on, you know, something that can make a difference, you know. And it is really important to have those concrete steps. So I'm wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, just what you guys have to offer.
Sure. Well, our goal is to deprive the rich of their ability to steal from the poor and the powerful of their ability to destroy the planet.
Okay. And how do you do that?
Well, we've organized the movement into two separate parts. There's an above ground and an underground movement.
Okay.
The above ground, of which I'm a part, obviously, works for sustainable, just, and participatory institutions. And it assists the above-ground frontline activists with loyalty and material support, such as with the Occupy movement. And in any resistance scenario, the underground dismantles the strategic infrastructure of power. This is a basic tactic of both militaries and insurgents the world over, for the simple reason that it works. But such actions alone, they are never sufficient strategy for achieving a just outcome. This means that any strategy aiming for a just future must include a call to build direct democracies based on human rights and sustainable material cultures, which means that the different branches of resistance movements must work in tandem. the above ground and below ground, with a strict firewall, of course, in between the two, the militants and the nonviolent, the above ground frontline activists and the cultural workers. We need it all.
Interesting. I've never heard the above ground term before, so it's cool that you guys have kind of separated that. I think it's pretty smart. And I know that you mentioned before that you guys, I think, offer some support to Occupy.
Mm-hmm. We've been involved with the Occupy movement, specifically looking to work with the sustainability group.
Okay.
And we've also been working with a coalition organization called Occupy the Machine, which is actually a call for, of course, nonviolent civil disobedience against actual infrastructural sites of extraction, like mountaintop removal. And actually, that our goal this summer will be to support Earth First in the Marcellus Shale region against fracking.
Very cool.
Very cool. We've covered fracking a lot on the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Definitely interested in it.
And also, this kind of goes back to something that I guess you were saying before that I wanted to talk about a little more, that you were kind of saying that you were mentioning the mixing kind of like social and cultural problems with environmental problems. And I feel like something that we kind of talk about sometimes, or at least that I feel, is like, at least when it comes to animal rights and the environment, when you care about the world around you and other life, it kind of makes you a more empathetic human being, and kind of not to use up the world's resources and just kind of, you know, spend them like we kind of own everything, instead of that we're kind of connected to the world. So I think that's interesting, if maybe you want to elaborate on that kind of combination.
Sure. And for that reason, we've aligned ourselves with radical feminists, indigenous rights groups, anti-colonial movement, anti-racist. We're anti-capitalist. We see it all as connected. And many people know, you know, it feels wrong, especially a lot of young people. But not everyone always makes the connections between, for example, our obsession with celebrities and the extinction of polar bears, right? But they're really the two symptoms of the same disease. I think many young people could benefit from knowing that certain feelings of depression or desolation that they may have, they're a result of our sick culture, an insane culture, really, because it must be insane to destroy the very planet you're living on. And it's not wrong with them. Personally, I know it wasn't until my mid-20s that I really started to read radical literature and start to make these connections. I always had the idea that something was wrong, but, you know, everything's a separate issue. Well, it's not, and that's why I was really drawn to DGR, because we're really a full-spectrum movement. We see it all together.
Mm-hmm. And what was the breaking point for you? Because you just said in your 20s, that was when you first started really looking around and figuring stuff out.
Well, in college, I was a criminal justice major.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wasn't so much into the theory of why people commit crimes, but the actual looking at and critiquing the criminal justice system, I really opened my eyes to the systematic racism that obviously is a major problem within the system, and of course who and what the criminal justice system actually serves.
Yeah.
So I was interested in that, and then there were a couple books that I read. Some people might have heard of Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. I think that book was important because it taught me anyway that this isn't the way it should be, and this isn't the way it always has been. In fact, this civilization, this insane way of life that we've formed, is only very recent if you look at the scale of human history, only the last 8,000 years. So that led me to certain other authors like Derek Jensen, who's one of the authors of this book. And that's why I was really drawn to DGR, because all of a sudden it was like, wow, it's all connected. And then once you really make that realization, you start to see it in every aspect of your life.
Yeah.
That's true. And DGR is, it does cover like a very large spectrum of issues, culturally and environmentally right now. And I'm wondering, are just like kind of, you see a lot of organizations, and I think a lot of them have a smaller focus on what they're kind of trying to conquer. And you guys have kind of taken a lot of these problems and are kind of trying to start the whole movement. And I'm just wondering, because you're so involved, like, do you ever worry that maybe it would be easier to have like a focused organization, or do you think that the whole kind of movement mentality is a better way of getting this done?
Yes, and our critique of, you know, the environmental movement, so to speak, so far is that we've tried to work within the system to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
Lee R. Keith, another author of the Deep Green Resistance book, has a great quote, and I don't have it in front of me, but to paraphrase, it's the task of an activist is not to navigate the systems of power and oppression with as much personal integrity as possible. It is to dismantle those systems.
Hmm.
So I think a lot... many more people are starting to see that really everything is connected, and we're trying to build alliances with all sort of social and environmental justice groups.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your goals then as you continue to form these relationships with Occupy and maybe other groups, just like kind of almost like yearly or within the next 10 years, what do you think the next real steps will be?
Well, we'd like to build a culture of resistance, which... kind of hard to explain, I guess, but really what a culture is and everything that that entails, song, feelings, stories, and et cetera. Instead of working within the system, we really believe that we need to create this idea that we need to fight together on all levels,
mm-hmm.
To really have a better future.
Mm. And you have different chapters all around the states, right?
Mm-hmm. There's actually a couple international groups as well. We have a main office located in the Pacific Northwest, and there's new groups forming, it seems like, every week around the country. And we actually have two DGR groups internationally, I think one in Australia and one in Slovenia.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very cool.
And as far as the New York part, is what do you think the main age range is, honestly?
We're a small group. But it's mostly younger people, I'd say, in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's involved. There's definitely some older folks as well. And more are coming as they, you know, start to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for having me on the show, by the
way. What about teenagers? Do you notice any like late high school, early high school students that have thought about becoming involved at all?
Not that I know of, mm-hmm. but some of the main organizers who actually work full-time for DGR with the main office are definitely in their young 20s, probably college-aged. And I know some of the most organized groups are in college towns, and a lot of them are basically based around the colleges.
So why do you think that is then? Because I know that you are a teacher and you have a bit of history with kind of knowing teenagers because you're a high school teacher. Why do you think that teenagers aren't so involved in worldly issues, just in your own personal opinion?
Well, first of all, I don't blame them because when I was that age, I didn't care about much more than video games, having fun, and definitely not school. But our culture has built into it a way to not be interested in these issues that really matter. Our consumer culture, celebrity culture, television, media, all of it is geared towards basically keeping our heads in the sand.
Yeah.
I also feel like with teens, it's like you're made to think that it's not going to affect you. Mm-hmm. But if anything, that like... at this age, it's affecting us the most because, like, the bills that are being passed, it's like we're going to be in, like, our 20s by the time they're, like, stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we're going to be trying to, like, pay for rent and, like, really figure out, like, our lives as far as, like, supporting ourselves and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's true. The culture does – our culture kind of support – it's like you're not supposed to really care. It's like you're being a teenager is just kind of about, like, sort of wasting your time and fooling around and not really trying to prepare yourself.
But I feel like it hasn't always been like that. Of course, like, we don't know, but I feel like at least in, like, the 60s and 70s, it was a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, when there's been, like, big social changes.
Well, I heard even somebody told me recently that the term teenager was actually created on the Madison Avenue advertisers sometime in the 50s for, of course, selling them stuff.
Wow. Jeez.
Well, we're going to take a quick break for some music right now by the band Lemon Pipers.
Welcome back to Pure Imagination. I'm Julia.
My name's Rachel.
And we're coming back for a second half of an interview with Mike Thompson.
In studio.
Oh, yes. Always very extravagant. Who is the head of the New York chapter of the Deep Green Resistance, which is an analysis, strategy, and movement. It's very unique, very cool, offers a broad spectrum of things that they're trying to tackle as this growing movement, and I've had a great interview so far, and I wanted to start off by asking you about some things that I took notes on during the first half of the interview, where you mentioned that, you know, you guys support a lot of different things, you're anti-capitalist. I was wondering if you could tell us maybe about some of the other organizations you might be supporting that offer different economic systems that are a better alternative than capitalism right now. Because I know capital, you know, anti-capitalist, but, you know, what does it mean? Like, what's the actual change? Like, what can we go to?
Well, capitalism has taken over the world.
Right.
So there's really almost no real way to live outside of that system.
Mm-hmm.
For now. But we're one of a growing number of radical activist groups. There are many out there who really are committed to actual revolution and not just reform. We're organizing. We're supporting, I think I mentioned Earth First later on. Rising Tide is another group. AIM, the American Indian Movement.
Mm.
And yeah, this idea that we should be looking to indigenous cultures as an example is obviously open to criticism because no society is perfect. It's not like the noble savage, you know, being a flawed idea. It's not like, oh, we're going to go back to living as Native Americans.
Right.
But we do need to learn from them, I think.
Yeah.
And what else did you ask? I'm sorry.
Oh, that was just a question about possibly some of the other economic choices that there might be out there that you're aware of.
Well, I spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not too much out there except for like escapist communes, which obviously
yeah.
we're not going to escape. We don't want to escape.
No.
We want to fix everything and have the human race survive for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What if, I mean, the show is called Pure Imagination, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Let's imagine that every community around the country, around the world, they had a certain land base, a piece of land that they lived on, and they could only eat what was provided, not just eat, but everything had to come from that land base. No trucks of kiwis coming from New Zealand. Trucks don't come from New Zealand. You know,
New Zealand kiwis. Right.
No avocados coming from Mexico every day into the city. I mean, we love avocados,
yes,
obviously.
We'd miss those.
We would. But I think that humans are smart. And if they were forced, I don't want to force anybody to do anything, but if they had to, if a community had to rely on simply their land base alone, then that would affect their decision-making process.
Because
every year you would want the salmon to return or the elk to return. It's not necessarily against farming.
Yeah.
But it would have to be a way that was unsustainably, obviously, because you cannot go and conquer someone else's land.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I feel like, things kind of are sort of progressing in that area as people kind of get, a sort of infatuation with local foods and, really trying to live healthier. Of course, there can always be more, but I think there is, a growth in that movement. And I remember we had someone, or we had an organization on the show a few episodes back that was kind of trying to offer an alternative economic system. And I remember the woman, I'm blanking on her name right now, but we can go back and look at the episodes later. But she was she had this thing that I've thought about what she said a few times after the show. And just that like money, like a dollar bill is like, it's like trust between two people. Like, it's like, trust that this is going to be worth what you're getting for it. And just, I feel like that kind of like really changed my idea of, how much money meant and what was actually going on inside.
And also when you buy something, she was talking about how if you buy something, then like where that dollar actually leads to. If you're in a small town, like if you buy an apple, that dollar's going to go to the person who bought the dirt from the guy around the road or like whatever. Like, it's something that like you don't, it's not even possible anymore, it seems like.
Yeah. So I think her organization's idea was that you could kind of trade services between each other. You know, think you use people's different talents to keep things very local and to help out people when, they're in need with your skills, which I think is, a cool thing and definitely an option. And
it's also, I feel like it's bigger in the art community too.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Like the other day, like a friend's going to make a music video for us, and I was like, oh, well, I'll help you like sew some dresses for trade. Like, it's all just for the love of it and like just helping each other out and having fun with what you know how to do best.
Just like helps to develop like stronger relationships through communities. And
absolutely. And those would be the only true democracies, right?
Yeah,
direct
yeah.
democracies, egalitarian societies.
Yeah.
And when we talk about revolution like that, we're not, people automatically assume, and there's a cultural reason for this, that, we want to take all the rich and line them up against the wall and shoot them. That's not what we're saying here. Imagine if the rich, their money had no more value.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
it would be a whole different ballgame.
It would. And, you just, I think we're still on the verge of finding a realistic and a successful way to really have a revolution. Like, communism is, great, but hasn't really been a correct way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like never a happy ending. And I don't know, I guess I guess we're still on the verge of figuring that out.
Yeah.
But,
well, Derek Jensen's critique of communism, I definitely agree with it. And we're not communists, obviously, was that it wasn't that the people should control the means of production.
Yeah.
Which was an industrial economy. It's just depending. It just changes who owns it. There should not be an industrial economy.
Yeah.
An industrial economy converts living systems into dead commodities to be sold for cash.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. Oh, it's definitely true. So also, I guess, and this was something that I think kind of got mixed up in the first question, but it was something that I had taken notes on before earlier in the interview when you said indigenous rights groups, which is a I think kind of a controversial subject, just because I think there are a lot of fantasies about the indigenous lifestyle. At the same time, there are a lot of things to be learned. But I was wondering, as a group, and you have affiliated yourself with groups that are in support of these rights, what your opinion was on these groups?
Well, support is the right word,
right,
which you said, because obviously we're not going to be going into the reservations and saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this and this. We need to listen to them. We need to listen to what their needs are,
mm-hmm.
How they would perceive a better world, mm-hmm. a just world. I mean, we don't need to go into the problems that Native Americans are facing on reservations all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
But support them with whatever they need and learn from their communities, which were actually really sustainable communities. Native Americans have been here for 40,000 years, they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just, you know, in North and South America.
Yeah. No, there's definitely things that should be taken from them, and I don't know. And it was, of course, something that I think when I was first thinking about that concept, I was like, wow, that's really great. Like, indigenous groups are perfect. But then, you know, you kind of have to step back and be like, every group has, you know, their problems. But, you know, they did seem incredibly, and all over the world, just sustainable and more humane than our kind of industrial culture has turned out to be.
Mm-hmm. There is no patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't need to go into the list of how these societies were perfect, because, again, they're not perfect.
Yeah.
But one example of DGR supporting an indigenous community is actually our comrades in the Great Plains region, DGR Great Plains.
Okay.
They have taken an action, nonviolent civil disobedience, which was actually a blockade of a liquor store that was... This liquor store, obviously the alcohol is illegal on the reservation. This liquor store placed themselves right on the road, right outside the reservation, clearly there to sell as much booze as they can to the reservation. So mm-hmm. So our friends up there organized a blockade
wow.
of this liquor store and are trying to get it shut down.
Jeez. It's a good
I didn't know that alcohol was illegal. On
In some,
oh.
yeah. And most, I think, because of the problems that it's caused there.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just so depressing that these people that are on these reservations and just the fact that they've been contained, that their lives have been kind of forced into these areas, that I think there's a lot of – there can be problems with depression and kind of like substance abuse. That's the concept.
It's like everywhere, though.
Yeah, it is, but
– I mean
– Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but it's a microcosm almost of what's happening everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess they're trying to figure that out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about the underground movement
that
DGR is.
Well, yeah, obviously,
doing.
as an above ground activist, I am in no way involved. But we advocate for the hypothetical existence of underground movement. And they would be taking actual actions. We're thinking mostly sabotage, industrial sabotage, to sort of actually take the fight literally mm-hmm. to the power structure.
Yeah. So physical actions.
Yes.
And what's your personal opinion on that? Obviously, you're on the different layer, but...
Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely necessary, and that's really what makes us radical, is that we need to finally take by any means necessary approach.
Mm-hmm.
This is a unique area that a unique era that we're living in. The Industrial Revolution was less than five generations ago. We really only started to live like this in the 1950s. That's when really industrial agriculture and petrochemical fertilizers really started going on. And that was the decade in which my parents were born. So it's all happening now, really. It's happening before our eyes. And we can be the ones that finally make the necessary changes, or we can explain to our grandchildren why we were unable to prevent catastrophic collapse.
So you don't think it's possible completely nonviolently and
It could.
Rule-abiding.
And that's why we love Occupy Wall Street. We love the Occupy movement. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting the word out. It's bringing attention to these to the important matters. But no, there's a reason why nonviolent protests in neatly cordoned areas are perfectly legal, and that's because they don't actually confront or challenge the power structure at all.
Yeah.
They're more than happy to have us marching on the street holding signs.
That's true. And when you think about other nonviolent movements in the past, Gandhi, the civil rights movement, like they, you know, did try to make it past their government's rules in a lot of ways, and just kind of like really Gandhi, the Salt March, all these, mm-hmm. you know, cool things where they just kind of work through the rules in a very strategic way. And I think that's probably the best way to do it, and hopefully is what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's what's cool about Occupy, too, is it's like it's very similar to what you were saying, is that there's different levels of like how much people want to physically put in as far as violence goes. Like, you can go to a protest and there can be like some like super like you can tell the energy is like really intense in like certain parts, and then it's like different in like another area,
mm-hmm.
which is nice because then like everyone can be there, families.
Absolutely.
Or
yeah.
or younger kids who are mm-hmm. willing to really put their bodies at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's culture of resistance. We have that and we have this. There's a full spectrum.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But I love one of Gandhi's quotes. I have a problem with some of his other quotes. But one of them is I don't remember exactly, but the purpose of civil disobedience is to provoke, a response
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
from the authorities. And one great example, and you can check out on PBS, the American Experience show on the Freedom Riders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They would be an example of nonviolent civil disobedience that we would be going for. They really, you know, it was a mixed race group of activists that would ride these public Greyhound buses down into the Deep South, intentionally provoking. I mean, there was one part in the show where they were interviewing the chief of police, and you know, he basically said, "Yeah, we let the KKK come out, but we told them they only have 10 minutes to do what they wanted with them."
Wow.
And the KKK came out and beat them near to death for 10 minutes while the cops stood by and watched. Actually burned down one of the buses, too. But it's quite different, for example, than, you know, a peaceful protest rally or a letter-writing campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Those are great documentaries, too, the Freedom Riders PBS mm-hmm. stuff. I've seen some of
those. Everyone should see that.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, no, it's always stuff like that that catches you. Again, every day. I think as we're nearing the end of this interview, I was, you said you're recruiting. I was wondering what people can do if they really want to get involved or how they can help you guys out.
Well, first of all, they should definitely go to the website, which is deepgreenresistance.org.
Mm-hmm.
If you're locally in the area in New York, you can go to our Facebook page. You can like it, which is facebook.com/DGRNewYork. From there, you could obviously get in contact with me. There's an email list. Right now, we're working supporting Occupy. It's our main thing. But this summer, as I mentioned before, we are going to be supporting Earth First against this fracking in Appalachia. Did you see there was a article the other day in the Times about game over for the climate? This tar sands.
No.
You know about the tar sands, right? It's the,
not enough.
In Canada, they're basically bulldozing forest and collecting this, scooping out this mud, which basically with bulldozers, and there's a small percentage of fossil fuels within that. They're going to maybe build that pipeline all to it. But basically the atmosphere's amount of carbon that mm-hmm. would be released if we were to fully take all this stuff out is going to be, it could lead to that tipping point where it's,
wow.
it might already be too late. But that's no excuse not to fight back, right?
Yeah. Great. Jeez.
And is there any other big events that you have planned for the next couple months in New York?
Not specifically in New York, but you can often see our table at the Occupy Town Square meetings.
Cool.
And I think Occupy Town Square is actually trying to do throughout different neighborhoods.
Nice.
So, yeah, you can find us there and check the Facebook page, or you can also subscribe to our email list there.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for coming in studio, Mike. It was a pleasure to have you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And right now we want to go to a song. Tell Me Something Good.
Do, 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 do.
best song ever. Mm. Every song we play is the best song ever, so just accept it.
Sassy.
Yeah. Sassafras. Mm-hmm. we have some current events, to tell you about in the New York City area for all of you listening down here.
Up here. I know. Essentially.
I did them, whatever.
Oh, whatever. Trying to make a joke?
Yes.
Good joke.
A bad inside joke.
Oh, man.
Sorry. So the first one... Well, okay, there's three. Julia, I guess I'll go first and then you go and then I'll go again.
Oh, no.
Oh. let's see, what day is this? This is the 17th and then... Oh, I'll go for this one the first. Okay, so this one, everyone, is tomorrow. It's free and it's the Brooklyn Food Conference, which we're very excited about, but we can't go and we'll tell you why in a second. But for all of you who aren't going to this other thing, you should go to the Brooklyn Food Conference. And food for the people and the planet. There's going to be a huge expo. It's all free. It's kid-friendly, music, art, film, all kinds of stuff. And you can go to the website, which is... Or they have a Facebook page, facebook.com. And you can look up Brooklyn Food Conference. And it's at the high school tech in Greenpoint. Nope.
What?
Fort Greene.
Oh, so close.
Close
you got
enough.
It. You got it.
And then that's tomorrow for everyone, and it's free, which is really cool.
Perfect.
And then the reason we can't go to that is because
we are playing this really fun, family-friendly, cool show.
Free.
Free. Emphasis on the free. Emphasis on the 2 p.m. Saturday, May 12th. It's a reading about this really cool new kid's book called Goblin Heart. It's like a cool fairy tale.
It's cool.
Mm-hmm. It's cool, guys. Don't worry. It's going to be cool. You should come.
It's cool.
Yeah. You know it's cool.
Because it's cool.
Oh, you know what? You're done. Julep overcomes overcomes the physical and social challenges of being part fairy, part goblin. Aren't we all a little part fairy, part goblin?
And I read this book today over breakfast.
Yeah, did you like it?
Yeah, I just sped right through it. Look at me. It was actually very sweet.
Catching up on your reading?
Mm-hmm. And the author, which his name is...
Brett... Axel. Man, we're on it today.
Yes, he's going to be reading the book tomorrow for everyone, which is, it's good. It's really sweet. And we're also going to be playing some songs.
Mm-hmm. An acoustic set our band Super Cute is going to be playing. Going to be very cool.
Yep. And that is at Blue Stockings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we said that.
No, I don't think so. You know, it was kind of like a mythical event. Like, we never were going to say where it was.
And Blue Stockings is one of our favorite bookstores to just hang out at. They have lots of yummy treats and always a good place to catch up on all the new and inspiring books that are being put out by really great authors.
Mm-hmm. Lots of fun talks and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's cool because they just, like, take their bookshelves and slide them to the sides and put chairs. It's very New York. Really fun.
We've seen the process.
We have. We've arrived too early for things and seen them slide their bookshelves.
Yes.
And Blue Stockings is located in the Lower East Side on Allen Street. Very good location, right off the F train.
New Yorker.
And that's tomorrow at 2 p.m. And then, let's see, on May 17th, there is a Feminist General Assembly.
Hey.
And it's the first one ever, and it's going to be in Washington Square Park at 6:30. And we're very excited for that. We're definitely going to be there. And the rain date is the next day, which is the 18th. And everyone should go down. And you can also look them up on Facebook. And it's WOWSNYC. Women Occupy Wall Street.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. And everyone should go down.
Trying to plan my outfit right now.
Oh.
Too many ideas.
And also Sunday's Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing on Mother's Day, Ray?
I'm doing all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Some graffiti.
Oh, really?
With my mother.
With your mother, the street artist?
Mm-hmm. Street art graffiti.
But we're not going to talk about her alias because it's a secret. So.
And also some vegetarian Thai food.
Oh, nice.
Hmm.
Huh.
And some gift opening.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, how cool.
Yes.
Miss, you have a mother. Mm. So, that was our questionable current events section for today. We've had a wonderful show. We had Mike Thompson in studio here.
And you can go to his website, which is deepgreenresistance.org. And there's also a book that tells you all about stuff that they've been doing by multiple different well-known authors. And it's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Deep Green Resistance. You guys can check that
out. .org.
.org. Look at you. Mm. So we'd like to say some goodbyes right now and thank yous. We'd like to say thank you to Jason Tabenfield, who is the program director.
And Myron Bitts, who is the engineer for today.
And Casey
Holford.
We each know half of the name. And Neil, who works in the vitamin department.
And everyone else who has put in a lot of work for this amazing studio. And, of course, Gary Null for having us on his network.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of the dreams.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it. Life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.